Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Okay, second hour of the show. Great to have you with us today. Brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. The bags are right there by the register, nice and easy. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed second to none. Corey, thank you. He sent some barrels over to me with my brother last week, and I appreciated it very, very much. They are now gone, Corey. Okay, just so you know. Didn't take long. And this is all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We're going to be talking with Aaron McMahon of MLive.com about Michigan and the season they've had so far. Michigan coming off a bye week to take on the Nittany Lions tomorrow. 3:45 will be the kickoff on at 2 o'clock here on News Radio 1070 WKOK and streaming live on WKOK.com. And that's all coming up tomorrow. Don't forget Bucknell and Lehigh on Eagle 107 tomorrow. Tonight, Selins Grove and Midwest playoff game tonight, Eagle 107. And Bucknell basketball gets rolling next week on Eagle 107 as well. All right. Our play-by-play calls of the day. A three-point barrage at the Garden last night for the Celtics. The call of Marv Albert.
Ingles fires for three. He just helps set things up. Horford for three.
First part of the season with Coach Bud, so he has a lot of trust. As Horford knocks that.
Ozeman for three. Crowd goes crazy in Milwaukee when he unloads a three.
High-scoring second quarters is being relentless in their attack.
DeCupo. Lots of time for Morris and takes advantage.
Swing, attack the closeout, get to the rim.
Horford for three. Oh, he gets the friendly first half. Irving on a catch and shoot. Yes. Going inside with a three-point shot, not throwing. Sarcastic shot at you, Brent.
No, that was just a little.
The injured Jaylen Brown has played very well. Here's Irving again for three. Yes. Irving looking for that three-pointer. Now gets it to Tatum. Horford. Yes. Morris couldn't find position. Oh, Baines for three. And
successful to add value to a team as Marcus Morris has a power.
Very similar to what we used to see in the ABA. I don't know if how much ABA you saw. Horford passed on a three. Tatum, yes. Ruined the moment. Irving. Into the paint. They kick it out. Morris for three. Yes.
Wants to Kupo playing the center position.
Hayward over for three.
Those are all three-point shots last night. All three-point shots. The Celtics came up one three-pointer shy of the NBA record. Those were all three-point makes last night. That is the Celtics, and that is how the NBA is played today. The value of the three-point shot on display at the Garden last night. All right. Coming up, it'll be Penn State and Michigan. In Ann Arbor tomorrow. Kickoff 3:45, airtime 2 o'clock here on News Radio 1070 WKOK and streaming live on WKOK.com. And with that, we bring in Aaron McMahon from MLive.com. Aaron, thanks for the time you're giving us today. We appreciate it.
Good afternoon, guys. Good to be with you.
All right. Let's get going with this. Rashawn Gary, Tariq Black, what do you think about their availability for Saturday?
I think there's probably a better shot that we'll see Tariq Black than Gary. Tariq got in the game a couple of weeks ago against Michigan State briefly, I think for like one play. Then Michigan took him out prior to a timeout. He's fully cleared to play. It's just a matter of whether he's in game shape and ready to go. Michigan is coming off a bye this week, so he's had a couple of weeks to kind of get back in the flow of things. I would not be surprised if we saw him play. Gary's a little bit more of a question mark. He's obviously sat out the last 3 weeks. Michigan's been kind of quiet about whether or not he's been cleared to play. It sounds like he has not as of earlier this week. Now, there's always the possibility that he does play, but if I was a betting man, I'd put money on Rashawn Gary playing Saturday. I would say no.
All right. Offensively, I mean, this will be one of those you've been asked 1,000 times by people from out of town, but what difference has Shea Patterson meant?
Quite a bit. You know, I always tell people this, if Michigan, when I had him last year, they probably would have won 9 or 10 games. He's kind of opened things up, helped Michigan drastically. He's made the offensive line look better. He's made the receivers look better. And it's not just with his arm. It's, you know, he's able to get out of the pocket. His ball fakes have been really good. He's kind of an all-around quarterback. He's the guy Michigan drastically needed last year. He's a good guy, quality guy, strong arm. He's completing 67% of his passes. He's just about, I think, what everyone, you know, in Ann Arbor was hoping for when he kind of came in. You know, he's not throwing for 300, 400 yards like he did at Ole Miss, but he's done everything that's been asked of him, and the Michigan offense has taken a drastic step forward as a result.
All right. Defensively, obviously they play great defense. And for me, one of the keys is that when you have what I perceive to be a legitimately great player at each level, your odds of playing great defense grow exponentially. And even without Gary, they still have that great player at that level in Chase Winovich. What do the corners mean to how Don Brown wants to play?
Quite a bit. You know, they obviously have they play a man scheme. So it's a lot of one-on-one, a lot of, you know, guys relying on their speed and agility. And Michigan's got a lot of speed out there. You know, they got two guys in potential NFL picks next year, LeVert Hill and David Long. You saw them a little bit last year. They're fast and heavy group. They're the ones that, they're determined on whether or not they're able to keep up with their guys. And so far this year, they've done a good job. You know, the secondary was hampered early on with penalties. I can recall a couple. David Long got ejected for the game for targeting the secondary. The safety Tyreek Nell was ejected for targeting one game. They've really kind of cooled things down the last few weeks. They're a group that Don obviously relies on heavily. They need for Michigan to play well defensively. The corners need to keep up with their man. They've done a good job. They struggled a little bit week one against Notre Dame, but you know, as a whole, defensively from a secondary standpoint or the line, Michigan's really cleaned things up the last 7 weeks.
Aaron, after the Notre Dame game, Michigan, for all intents and purposes, nationally flew under the radar. In some ways, did that help them just go about their business?
You know, not only flew under the radar, but I can recall doing media interviews with national radio stations with hosts asking me whether Jim Harbaugh was in the hot seat. I think it did a little bit. You know, I think the Michigan fan base was dejected after that week one loss. They kind of thought, well, here we go again. You know, this, a lot of talk, a lot of hype about the offensive changes and this defense being very good, but not playing well against good teams. And they've kind of rebounded very nicely. You know, the Michigan fan base was slowly kind of waiting to see if they could play well against a Wisconsin or a Michigan State. And in both instances, Michigan's, you know, defense not only stood the test, but their offensive line has shown drastic improvement. I think that's kind of been the underrated part of this Michigan football team this year, is that offensive line. It was awful last year. And the Michigan players will tell you that. They admit that. They brought back pretty much the same group of guys this year as they had last year. And they got a new offensive line coach, Ed Warner. He simplified some things scheme-wise up front. And then you throw in Shea Patterson, and things look a lot better.
All right. I want to get to Caron Higdon. My opinion, good college running back. Don't know if he's a pro, but good college running back. How well does he work with the offensive line and the tight ends?
You know, quite a bit. They've obviously got a good relationship there. Caron's kind of developed into a bit of a leadership role now. He's kind of more outspoken and not afraid to give his opinion. And he's evolved as a back. He put on 10 pounds in the offseason, put on a lot of strength and muscle. He's not a very big guy, but he finds holes when he's able to, and he's able to kind of get through there. He's seen results. He's Michigan came into this year kind of with the idea of having two. They said in the offseason they felt like they had two number one running backs in Caron Higdon and Chris Evans. Chris Evans is banged up much of the year. He's back and healthy now, but Caron's looked very much like the guy that left off last year. He was just shy of 1,000 yards. He flirted with the NFL, but decided to come back for senior season. He's up over 800 yards now. He's had seven straight games of 100 yards rushing or more. So he's, you know, when it regards to his relationship with the offensive line, it's pretty good. You know, we were talking with an offensive lineman yesterday, John Runyon, and we asked him about Caron. He said, you know, Caron and them talk quite a bit. He's not afraid to, you know, tell the lineman, you know, his ideas or his thoughts on plays and things. And but no, he's done very well.
Okay, Will Hart. You hardly ever sit there and say, hey, let's talk about the punter. Except this guy has 28 punts, and 16 of them are over 50 yards. He's averaging 49 yards a punt. What has he meant for the defense because of how he's able to punt, and how well have they covered it? Because obviously the temptation would be you can outkick your coverage.
Yeah, and before I even get to that, it's important to point out, he lost the punting job last year. You know, he started as a punter last year, lost it to a guy named Brad Robbins. Brad's had back surgery. He had back surgery in the spring, and he's sat out the whole season. So, you know, Will Hart's kind of got the job back. He's, you know, we haven't talked to him yet all this year, but it sounds like he's showed drastic improvements. But with regard to your question, yeah, it's really helped Michigan's, obviously, their field, you know, the field advantage. You know, they pin a lot of teams inside the 20 down near their opposing end zone, and it's basically forced teams to drive 70, 80, 90 yards to score. You know, so that's obviously, you know, helps Michigan's, you know, defensive standpoint. It helps things offensively because they get the ball back and they're not usually pinned in their own territory like they were a lot last year. So it's helped, I think, all around, absolutely.
Okay. Now I want to get to the linebacking group. Devin Bush, when you watch him play on an everyday basis, what really sticks out to you about Bush?
You know, he's got good speed. He's a hard hitter. He's got that kind of football mentality of, you know, football's his life, and he's very he's a hard hitting guy. You know, I question whether he's gonna. I mean, he's a little undersized for the NFL level. I think somebody will give him a shot. He'll probably go early on. But, you know, he's the type of guy that Jim Harbaugh likes, Don Brown likes. He does what he's asked. He's football all the time. He's not afraid to kind of bust through the line and make a play when needed. And he's, you know, he's one of the better players on defense. You know, I think he gets overlooked sometimes because he's the linebacker and you've got, you know, Rashawn Gear and Chase Winovich in front of him. But he's, you know, he's the heart and soul of that defense. And, you know, he's kind of, again, he's another guy who's picked up where he left off last year. And, you know, I think, you know, come draft time next year, you're going to be hearing his name.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt it because, I mean, I think his speed, especially lateral speed, is incredible with what he's been able to do. What's the atmosphere like? Because, look, there's only one team in the Big Ten right now that is in the position Michigan is in at this point. What was the atmosphere like around that campus from January 1 through July 31, and what's it like now?
Yeah, I'd say a lot of frustration. You know, folks, I mentioned the whole Harbaugh hot seat thing, and
right.
A majority of the fan base here isn't on board with that. You know, they realize that, you know, Harbaugh's resume is good, and he's shown that he's been successful elsewhere. But, you know, a lot of frustration. You know, Michigan's been able to, you know, bring in some big recruiting classes in the last few years. They've obviously got a lot of playmakers, a lot of guys that have those high stars, but the results just haven't really followed. Right now, though, you know, it's I think cautiously optimistic. This fan base is kind of, you know, Michigan's kind of run the gauntlet and shown that they can compete with some of these bigger teams. They've shown that they'll be able to win games on the road. So that was a problem last year. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I think it's, you know, cautiously optimistic going into obviously this game, and they've got, you know, Ohio State at the end of the season in Columbus, a place they haven't won since 2000. So it's, you know, the fan base, I think they're starting to get more excited. I think they realize this team is a good one. It's comparable a lot of cases to the 2016 team that was one game away from getting to the Big Ten championship game. So it's, you know, I think they're still in a wait and see mode, but I think they realize that this team is a lot better than the one that they watched last year.
What do you think of Penn State?
I don't think they're as good as they were last year, at least from my outside perspective. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're, you know, you saw them, you know, kind of, you know, step up there against Michigan State. I think not having Saquon Barkley hurts them a little bit, but I'm really impressed by Miles Sanders, that running back. He seems like he's filled the void really well. The Michigan coaching staff's mentioned him a couple times this week. The players have acknowledged him as well. I don't think Michigan, by any standards, is looking past this one. I think they realize that they've got their hands full here. Penn State obviously dominated them last year, and they remember that. I think it's going to be a lot closer of a game than maybe some folks realize. A lot of folks here in Michigan think Michigan's going to win this handily, similar to their game against Wisconsin a few weeks ago, where they won by 25 points. I think I have Michigan winning by 10, but I can totally see this game end up being maybe a one possession game.
How has Harbaugh been to deal with? Is there any difference in dealing with him this year as in past years, or is it just same old gym, same old deal? Because sometimes when you get hit with a little bit of adversity, you change just a little bit in what you're doing.
Sure, yeah. I'd say there has been. You know, prior to last season, he was obviously, you heard his name a lot. You know, he was in the national headlines for sleeping with, going to recruits' homes and having a sleepover and doing all these public things. Last year, he was kind of more reserved. He kind of held back. He stayed off Twitter and didn't really get into the fights with the coaches like he had the prior years. And there's a similar case coming in this year. I think he realized that he needed to, win some games. He needed to win some big games. Coming this year, they were 1-5 against their rivals, Michigan State and Ohio State. He got the win over Michigan State this a couple of weeks ago. But even the last week or so, it seems like he's been a little bit more jovial. You know, he was more open last week. He was joking around with reporters during the bye week and kind of, he wasn't afraid to kind of open up a little bit. You're starting to see a little bit more, and I think that's a result of more wins. You know, everyone's more happy when you're winning, but I think he also realizes, too, that he needs to kind of seal the deal this year and get this team over the hump, so to speak, and into maybe that Big Ten championship game that so many fans around here have been clamoring for.
Aaron, an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for the time, for the information. I look forward to running into you on Saturday.
Absolutely. Good talking to you.
Aaron McMahon, MLive.com. We thank him for the time he gave us today. It's been fun having both Aaron and John Bacon on the show to talk about the Penn State-Michigan game coming up tomorrow in Ann Arbor. 3:45, the kick airtime, 2 o'clock here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And I know a lot of people stream it. A lot of people stream it. Last night after the talk show with James Franklin last night, and then I always take the pregame with James after the talk show. I mean, at that point, they're having meetings and we end up traveling out to Michigan. So we do the pregame show usually after the talk show. At that point, they're done practicing except for a walkthrough. I mean, that's why we tape it on Thursday night after the show. So I went back in, I was talking with some friends, and they say that what they love to do is they love to, at the tailgate, stream WKOK and play the post and listen to the postgame show where, you know, everybody in the tailgate listens to it. So yeah, the tailgate may be in State College outside Beaver Stadium. They like to take the laptop and they like to stream the postgame show for everybody in the tailgate on the WKOK app. How about that? Either laptop or they do it off the phone. They do it off the phone. They actually can take the phone, they hook it into speakers. They can do it on the app. That's pretty interesting that they're able to do that. Really interesting. But then this is also Gary Goloshevsky. Gary's not listening today because Gary is traveling. He's driving. He and Amy are taking the kids out to Ann Arbor. They're actually going to be at the game tomorrow. But he's the genius that comes up with all this stuff. Now, he may not come up with the ideas for it. The ideas may have emanated from someplace else, but still. Again, it is the Tom McGrath tailgate. And sometimes the ideas on the Tom McGrath tailgate do emanate from Tom. but it's interesting how you can use the app in so many different ways. You know, how you can go and get the stream so many different ways. And I think people are surprised sometimes where it's used and how it's used. All right, football tomorrow. And then next week, we have a football-basketball combo. Bucknell basketball gets underway next week. Bucknell football continues. Penn State football continues next week, but Penn State basketball also opens. In fact, the Nittany Lions have an exhibition game tomorrow at West Virginia. Penn State did extremely well, we'll leave it at that, in their scrimmage with Temple last Saturday. Well, now they're going to take on West Virginia in an exhibition game tomorrow, and then they open up next Friday night when they take on North Florida at the Jordan Center, and then it's going to be Jacksonville State, then off to DePaul to take them in Chicago on Thursday the 15th of this month. So basketball and football in combo coming up. So we'll talk with Dick Girardi about that and the Breeders' Cup, which gets underway today in Louisville. So off to Louisville we go to talk to Dick Girardi in a moment, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Final half hour on this Friday. Penn State football tomorrow, Michigan in Ann Arbor, 3:45 the kick, 2 o'clock the airtime on News Radio 1070 WKOK, WKOK.com. Don't forget Bucknell at Lehigh tomorrow. That's on Eagle 107. Also coming up on Eagle 107 tonight, Sealands Grove and Midwest. 7 o'clock the kick, 6 o'clock the airtime, and then Sean Carey with the area's best postgame show, by far. And they'll also have more on Lewisburg, which is on 100.9 The Valley tonight. Or excuse me, coming up tomorrow. Lewisburg's tomorrow at 7 and 6:30 the airtime. So Lewisburg's tomorrow at 7. All right, so you got a playoff game tonight and a playoff game tomorrow. And that's 7 o'clock tomorrow, 100.9 The Valley. Football tomorrow. Believe it or not, basketball. Bucknell basketball gets rolling next week. So does Penn State basketball. And believe it or not, Dick Girardi and I head into our 15th season. Wow. How fortunate am I? Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket, and we're in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. DJ, 15th season together. Welcome. Great to have you with us today.
That's we will be starting our 15th season of hoops, and this is the 35th Breeders' Cup, and I want to win something somewhere.
Okay. Well, good. Now I know
more likely here than there.
My personal preference has something to do with a round ball going through a hoop. You would take cash if it meant something winning by a nose.
Yeah, no, it's fine. But no, I just want to enjoy life, and we just left the garden yesterday.
I know, and now here it is.
You're crushing those sorry Utes from Salt Lake City,
Utah. Gone. All right, the Breeders' Cup, a 14 horse field for the Classic. How deep is that field?
You know, I don't ever remember a Classic where I could make a case for at least half the field. Certainly in recent years, Steve, it hasn't been that complicated. American Pharoah 3 years ago looked like he was in a one horse race. Year after that, it was Chrome and Arrogate. It looked like they were in a two-horse race. And it's kind of played out like it was supposed to. This is much, much more complicated where the favorite's probably going to be something along the lines of 4-1. Right now, accelerates the morning line favorite. And he may, he's had a phenomenal season, but there's a chance he doesn't go favorite. I mean, Baffert's got two horses in the race, and whenever he's in the race, people want to bet on him. So we'll see. Yeah, that's even the part that's hard to gauge for Saturday, much less trying to figure out who's going to win.
And by the way, accelerates a five-year-old. I mean, you talk about the classic. These are older horses who have been through the grind.
Absolutely. I mean, you get some three-year-olds, not very many of them, who are on the Triple Crown Trail. I don't know. We have any left that are on the Triple Crown Trail. I'm sitting here with one of my
friends.
It's like everybody disappeared, I think.
Yeah.
I mean,
Mendelsohn.
I don't think we have a single horse in this race who entered the Triple Crown race or the Derby, which that is unusual. Usually somebody will have gotten through, but this year we got nothing. But there's two very good three-year-olds in the race. McKenzie, who won the Pennsylvania Derby, would have been Baffert's Derby horse prior to him getting hurt and prior to the emergence of Justify. And Catholic Boy, who won the Travers by four lengths and is very unusual in that he's a grade one winner on turf and dirt. That rarely happens anymore in the sport. So they're excellent three-year-olds, but as you said, they're in against some really good horses, including last year's three-year-old champion, West Coast, who's now four. That's also Baffert. You got horses from Europe. You have horses from Parks Racing. My man, Discreet Lover, who just won the last race at 45-1. And how about this? If you add up the total earnings of the 14 horses in the race, how about $42 million? And one race is all around the world. The Dubai World Cup winner is in the race, Thunder Snow. I mean, you got the UAE Derby winner, Mendelsohn, both of whom have the rare distinction of both having run last in the Kentucky Derby.
Yes.
So Mendelsohn did run in the Derby.
Yeah, I said that earlier.
Yeah. Mendelsohn, we just forgot that he ran because he didn't run for very long.
In fact, he's still running.
Like 70 legs, right?
He's still running.
He's back in a lot better form this time than he was 6 months ago, for sure.
He's 12-1. It's interesting because, obviously, Bob made the great quote about Bob Baffert. We didn't know we had a superstar waiting on the bench in Justify, so it worked out.
Right.
What was it? What has it been about McKenzie that initially he really liked as his number one horse?
Yeah, I mean, McKenzie was a brilliant two-year-old and was clearly, if you'd had a list of the top three in January and February this year, he'd have been on anybody's list. Every race was terrific. He had a real good race earlier in the year in California that he got disqualified from the win on, and then it wasn't long after that. It wasn't like he had an injury. It wasn't like a major thing. There was no surgery, but it was just the kind of thing with horses. They just couldn't take a chance. So he was out from until September 22nd, from February till September 22nd when he came back in the PA Derby. It looked great, Steve, winning it. Like it was Baffert and Smith, and they win lots of races, including three of the last four Pennsylvania Derbies.
Whenever the Kentucky Derby goes there, there's 20 horses at Churchill. Now it goes back with the classic this time at Churchill because it's Churchill's turn to host, and it's 14. How different a race is it strategically because it's a normal field?
It is different. The 20-horse field, it just doesn't happen anywhere but the first Saturday of May here at Churchill. The limit for the Breeders' Cup in almost every horse race in America is 14, and it makes it for a truer run race. So, yeah, I think it's better. Because there's just too many chances for something to go wrong, some bad horse getting in the way of a good horse when you add six horses to the mix. So, yeah, much truer race with 14.
Also, what's the Breeders' Cup, you know, days like, for example? You have Future Stars coming up on Friday. Then you've got the Classic, the Turf, the Distaff, the Mile, the Twin Spire Sprint, the Dirt Mile, the Turf Sprint. The wide variety and the quality of the fields, how different is the Breeders' Cup than any other day in racing?
Yeah, it's completely different. It's the two best betting days in the sport because you have all these good horses, as you said, in a variety of races, ages, surfaces. And the one thing I found over the years, and this will be Breeders' Cup 32 for me, is that you want to hit pause like during the day and you can't do it. It just every time you look up, it's like 2 minutes to post for the next race. And you want to get a chance to savor it because there's so many good horses, but you really don't. If you're gambling, which I've occasionally been known to do, you need to have a plan because otherwise it'll get away from you in a hurry. And you need to have a sense of what you're going to do at different times when you're going to do it. But it just goes so fast, which, typically, from doing games, when games are going fast, that means it's good. And it's the same thing here, Breeders' Cup Day. Unlike the Derby Day, which is endless because you're waiting essentially all day for one race.
Right.
There's always something else going on a Breeders' Cup. Like it's tomorrow with the 5-2-year-old races and Saturday with the 9 races for so many good horses. We have probably the best horse in the world here and Enable, the 2-time ARC winner who will run on the turf right before the Classic on Saturday. We might see a potential Kentucky Derby winner in the last race tomorrow in the Juvenile. And this is an especially good 2-year-old year with two terrific horses from the East and West Coast, from the two top trainers in America, and a third horse, Code of Honor, who I actually think can win the race. That would be that 5-1. That's a race everybody should watch late tomorrow afternoon because you may see the Derby winner in there.
When you watch the Juvenile over the years, what do you watch for that may give you clues on the next year?
That's a great question. Try to get a sense of what the horse might look like physically in 6 months. Look at the history of the people around the horse. How do they do with getting horses from November to May? And how fast are they running? Typically, if they're not running fast by now, they're not going to get fast next year. And these, like the three horses I mentioned, all of them have already run exceedingly fast for 2-year-olds at this stage of the year.
Same story about watching the next 100 yards pass, because obviously a mile and a quarter will be obviously a distance they have not gone. Will you watch the next 100 yards, kind of give you an idea in that horse?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I'll try to watch the gallop out. That's always something of interest.
Yeah.
But, you know, Steve, so much changes in 6 months.
Yeah.
What's more important is what happens in February and March and April of next year. See how they're developing. Because some of them, they run their best race as a 2-year-old, and they never run good again.
That's right.
We've only, I think, had two horses ever win the Juvenile and then come back to win the Derby. And the Breeders' Cup's been around 35 years. Street Sense and Nyquist, only two. I mean, think about that. So and they develop at different times. Like American Pharoah almost certainly would have won the Juvenile in 2014, but he had a slight problem and they didn't run him. Some other horses would have, but it's not necessarily the horse that. Well, it's definitely not the horse that's good in November. Yeah. It's also the horse that's good in April.
If I recall correctly, you can correct me on this. Didn't Secretariat lose his initial 2-year-old race?
He did. He finished fourth in a maiden race in Saratoga. And then I believe he was disqualified out of the Champagne as a 2-year-old. We're talking Secretariat here. I think that's right.
Yeah.
And then he lost his last race prior to the Derby. He finished third in the Wood Memorial. And everybody goes, he's really not that good. Well, actually he was, as it turned out.
as he set
the track record at Churchill and Belmont, which still hold it. Probably should have the Preakness record if they could have a teletimer that worked.
What's the atmosphere like in the state? And I ask this for this reason. You have the Breeders' Cup right now. Duke and Kentucky will be playing hoops next week.
Yep.
And then Kentucky in football is actually a factor, and they've got a game, maybe the biggest game they've ever had there, against Georgia. What's the atmosphere like in the state right now? Where does the Breeders' Cup fit with that?
Yeah, here's my impression, Steve. I've been here since late Tuesday. I don't get the same vibe I've gotten at other Churchill Breeders' Cups. I think there's a couple reasons. One, you just mentioned the fact that Kentucky football is finally good, and they put the game instead of at night, it's at 3:30 Saturday afternoon, which isn't helping the Breeders' Cup situation, obviously.
Right.
And obviously, Georgia's a great opponent. The fact that it happens to be a home game. Nothing's like the Derby. I mean, 150, 160,000 people. We've had bad weather. It's been raining for 24 hours straight. It's supposed to be better tomorrow and Saturday. I mean, better relatively. It's not going to be 80 degrees or anything. But typically, this has been the Breeders' Cup that gets the biggest attendances because it's the biggest venue, other than Belmont Park, which never gets it anymore for reasons that I'm not entirely sure of. So I'll be interested to see what kind of crowds they'll get. The Friday Breeders' Cup started in 07. So that dilutes it a little bit because it used to all be one day. But this is typically a place that we get 70, 75,000 people for the Breeders' Cup. I'll be interested to see. And the prices are, I don't know that they're Derby prices, but they're not cheap to get tickets here. So we'll have to see what the deal is going to be on the weekend. But, yeah, I mean, this is, of all the Breeders' Cup venues, look, Kentucky, this is the state sport. But if you said you could hold it at Del Mar 1 year and Santa Anita the next, every other year, I would have no problem.
Right, exactly.
You know it's going to be 80 degrees. You don't have to worry about things like, oh, the turf is soft, the track is sloppy. Not that I don't like Churchill, because Churchill's fine, because you can get a good steak at Pat's Steaks on Tuesday. And get some lima beans and some derby pie.
Pie.
What could be better than that? And they do not say either Louisville or pie. Yeah.
No.
People, I don't know.
That's Louisville pie.
You know the deal. I drove by the former Pizza Stadium on my way here. The name is now gone. It's now just University of Louisville Stadium. And that's right, catacorner to Churchill Downs, if anybody's ever been out here to
Lovely
Louisville.
Yeah, I sense that Little Caesars will jump in at some point. All right.
So, back, we'll get another pizza.
Oh, they'll get something. All right. Before we get to some hoops, All right, how do you want to play the classic? Because we all know that when you play these things, you go for it.
Yeah, what I'm hoping to do, Steve, is be in a position where I don't have to go for anything at that point. I already have a couple dollars in my pocket.
Yeah.
But if I have to play, I will probably use some form of McKenzie and West Coast,
okay,
and maybe a little Accelerate and sprinkle in a little Mendelsohn. Like I say, I'll be betting some exactas, but I'm hoping I don't have to bet because, as you can tell, I don't have a great opinion in that race.
All right, basketball. Penn State did really well in its scrimmage last Saturday. Bolden at 30, knocked down 7 threes. Now they got West Virginia coming up,
okay,
which will give the young guards a real education in the Coliseum on Saturday. You know, yep. And if they pass that, they'll feel pretty good about it. What's your feel about this team before the gate opens?
Well, first time since you and I have been doing this that you can make a pretty good case. Penn State has three of the 15 best players in the Big Ten.
Yes.
It's their front line of Reeves, Watkins, and Lamar Stevens, who I think is – Lamar's got a chance to be a first-team All-League player. The question, obviously, is how do you replace the experience and the productivity of Shep Garner and Tony Carr in the backcourt? And they made – I'm doing this from memory, Steve – like 200-plus of like 280 threes last season.
Right.
So how good are the young backcourt players? I mean, I've seen Miles Dredd live. You just gave me a nice report on Bolden. That's really what it's probably going to come down to, because the front court clearly, with John Harrah in the mix, clearly could compete with anybody in the Big Ten, and that's never happened since I've been doing this. So maybe you could tell me going back prior that Penn State had a front court that you felt comfortable with against every opponent. So, yeah, it's just going to come down to the young guards. How good are they? And how much better do they get from early November to early March?
Is the schedule one, when you look at the Cancun tournament, DePaul, North Carolina State, Virginia Tech, Alabama, is that the kind of schedule that gets you ready, in your opinion, to play a Big Ten schedule?
Very much so. No, I like the schedule. I like the NC State. I like Atlantic City. We like those hour-and-a-half drives instead of those 3.5-hour drives.
Absolutely.
I didn't see a game at the Palestra one at Ryder. That was a little disappointing. Or Princeton, since they're closer to even. But, yeah, Steve, I think it's great. Like Alabama, as you said, NC State, Cancun tournament. It'll be my first time in Mexico. You ever been to Mexico?
Once, yes. Right. Yeah, but not. But this will lead you. This will be.
Don't cause any trouble.
This will be. Wow. I'm being allowed back on a visa now.
I think it's good, and I think it will help. And now it's, for the first time, 20 Big Ten games. And it starts at Maryland on, I think, the first Saturday in December.
Yep, December 1, yep.
There you go. Okay. Well, I know my way around that.
I know you do.
And we like that. I'll stop at Woody's on the way back at some crab cakes.
Oh.
What could be better?
Well, not much, actually.
I'm looking forward to it for a variety of reasons. Mostly because that team last year was playing the best of any Penn State team maybe ever at the end of the year last year. Again, you've done it way longer than I have. Certainly since I've been doing it. I mean, they were playing like a top 20 team. I know it was the NIT, but they were killing people game after game. And you could just – it's interesting when you go from – we talked about this on the broadcast last year – from talent to confidence. Well, the confidence caught up with the talent. When it did, they started playing.
What does the versatility of Josh Reeves mean to a young team?
Yeah, I mean, as you know, I have been a Josh Reeves fan from day one. I think I don't know why people don't get how good he is, but that's their issue, not ours. But he's as good a defender as they're in the league. He's a great passer. He's now made himself into a more than capable three-point shooter. And if there's a better finisher at the rim, at the wing position than Josh Reeves, not just in the Big Ten, but anywhere, I haven't seen him. He's really good, and he's a senior. He's the one senior that's going to get major playing time, and it's huge for the program. And he's going to be a leader/star. I think he's going to have a great year.
Which then brings me to Jamari Wheeler, who will get the initial start at the point for Penn State. When you watch him defensively, what does he do to other teams?
Game changer on defense. And now that he's going to play more minutes, he could change games even more. That part of his game, there's never a question about. It's going to come down to, can he run your offense like you want? When he's open, is he going to be able to make enough threes that you got to guard him? Can he make his free throws? And stuff that it might not happen overnight, but there were flashes last year because he certainly sees the game. And will the game slow down for him? And can he slow himself down to catch up with the game? Because sometimes he would just get a little ahead of himself.
Dick, it all gets rolling in a week.
Yes, sir.
Enjoy Louisville. Enjoy a slice of pie.
I already had my pie for a week. I'm limited to one pie per week in Louisville.
Well done.
Thanks.
Well done.
All right, pal. See you next Friday.
See you next Friday.
All right, see you.
Dick Girardi in Louisville. All right, big weekend coming up. And don't forget to stock up at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.